So I was asked to speak today about not the work that I do in environmental history, but some of the writing that I've been doing for activehistory.ca as a contributor for the past couple of years. And a lot of the articles I've been writing quarterly for Active History have been focusing on emerging conflict between the Academy and the federal state in Canada over the commemoration of particular events in Canadian history. And as well as new efforts on the part of the cabinet to change institutions for the representation of Canadian history, and specifically the Canadian Museum of Civilization. Last December, I participated in a public consultation event in Toronto called My History Museum, A to Z, that was organized by a public history contractor for the CMC to go across the country and hear from Canadians about what they would like to see in what the federal government is proposing to transform the CMC into the Canadian Museum of History. The legislation has already been tabled in Parliament, this was late last year, to change the mandate of the Canadian Museum of Civilization to ostensibly give it a greater emphasis on Canadian history rather than history from outside of Canada. And again, one of the reasons I was invited here was that I kind of elbowed my way onto that panel prior to my invitation onto the panel. No academic historian had been invited onto any of the consultations across the country in Edmonton or Vancouver and Halifax. And so I emailed about 17 people at CMC to bring up this point, and you know, no historians had been consulted from the universities. And so I managed to be an additional fourth panelist. And so this has raised questions about whether or not we're in a new kind of history wars. So I want to speak about that today and set some parameters for what I think the actual conflict is. So the new history wars, I don't think, are battles over the meaning of Canadian history and whether national history should be the focus of our scholarship or political history should be the focus of our scholarship or military history. I think these new conflicts today are conflicts over federal public financing of historical research and historical preservation. Historians, archaeologists, anthropologists, librarians, and archivists all have a stake in these important questions and debates. And recent federal efforts to commemorate the War of 1812 and to create a Canadian Museum of History by rebranding the Canadian Museum of Civilization have triggered arguments among historians that in some ways echo the old history wars debates of the 1990s. But these arguments, I think, distract from the broader challenge of the steady reduction of federal public financing for historical research and historical preservation. Now, in the 1990s and in the 1980s, Canadian historians were allegedly at war with one another. A segment of first-generation post-war Canadian historians who were approaching retirement expressed discontent, to put it gently, with historiographical changes that had occurred over the course of the 1970s and 1980s, which shifted scholarship away from broad national and political histories toward a wider spectrum of academic inquiry that focused and considered the histories of women, ethnic minorities, labor, and regions and local histories. Their discontent was also directed toward new revisionist interpretations and analyses of Canadian history that tended to foreground criticism of the state and highlight crimes and sins of the past, including the internment of Japanese Canadians during the Second World War, the oppression of Aboriginal peoples, and the subjugation of women. The conflict among academic historians and the debates over historical revisionism and social history and national history and political history spilled out onto the national stage, I think, during the controversy and the Senate inquiry over the production of the CBC television documentary series, The Valor and the Horror. And that discontent among historians who lamented the scholarly shift from national political histories found its loudest voice in Professor Jack Granitstein, who in 1998 published an extended polemical essay called Who Killed Canadian History? And in 149 blistering pages, Granitstein took aim at the degradation of public knowledge of Canadian national and political history, what he called the, quote, basic nuts and bolts of Canadian historical knowledge. who was to blame? Who killed Canadian history? Well, many of us in the room know. In a buckshot approach, Granitstein offered a frenetic and illogical list of homicide suspects, including elementary and high school teachers, university professors, quote, TV, movies, comic books, and the internet, the Constitution, which gives control over education to the provinces, which, quote, guard their rights jealously, provincial ministries of education that, quote, bought Hollis Bullis every trendy theory to emerge from faculties of education, quote, the millions of immigrants who have poured into and continue to flood Canada, and federal multicultural policy that, quote, promotes a very weak nationalism. Needless to say, Who Killed Canadian History was a landmark work in these history wars of the 90s. And the echoes of Granitstein's cant have found their way back into public discourse regarding recent commemoration of Canadian history. Terry Glavin's recently syndicated op-ed article took direct aim at what he calls the history establishment at universities that's allegedly turned its back on Canadian history. For too long, Glavin writes, academic historians have neglected to tell our story. He claims that, in Prime Minister Harper's own words, the cabinet has chosen to celebrate the War of 1812, the start of the First World War, the bicentennial of the birth of John A. Macdonald, and the 150th anniversary of Confederation because, quote, these milestones remind us of a proud national story rooted in the great deeds of our ancestors and in a centuries-old constitutional legacy of freedom. And he warns his readers, however, that if it is a proud national story rooted in the great deeds of our ancestors you're after, the very last place to go looking for it would be the history faculty of a Canadian university. Glavin blames the failure of the Academy to tell our story on New Left politics of the 1960s, when, according to his understanding of Canadian historiography, quote, history was activism, and the old order was upended in order to focus on the marginalized and the oppressed. And Christopher Dummett, a professor of Canadian history at Trent University, endorsed Glavin's hypothesis, alleging that the history profession has become a kind of activist organization. The result is we have lost authority as a discipline, and we can't talk about history writ large. That's a bit of an unusual contradiction. The more active you become, the less relevant you are. And both Glavin and Dummett find fault in this activism on the part of academic historians, and they contend that this is the root of the shift away from national and political history and the root of our increasing irrelevance to the state and the wider public. The implication, I think, is that academic historians have become too sympathetic with leftist politics and that their active engagement with such politics has somehow rendered them illegitimate authorities on the history of Canada and no longer relevant to the Canadian public. The problem, of course, with this argument, or one of the problems, is that it makes normative another kind of active history. Nationalist active history. A small group of nationalist active historians have, in fact, found great success persuading the federal government to endorse and promote their particular and arguably narrow vision of Canadian history. Professor Granitstein has, in some ways, become the foremost nationalist active historian in Canada. And as he stated in Who Killed Canadian History, he had, throughout his career, consistently preached the gospel of Canadian history and national history to thousands of students. He wrote popular commercial books on topics in Canadian military history, and he appeared so regularly on television, radio, and in the pages of national newspapers that he's become a virtual metonym of Canadian history. But he's not alone. There are other nationalist active Canadian historians. For example, Christopher McCreary, a graduate from the doctoral program in Canadian history at Queen's, has also had tremendous influence on the policies of the federal government. He currently sits on the Board of Trustees for the Canadian Museum of Civilization, and he previously served as a senior advisor to the leader of the government in the Senate and played a prominent role in the renaming of the Maritime Command of Canadian Forces to the Royal Canadian Navy. And finally, Michael Bliss, another retired professor of Canadian history who has emphasized a desire to promote national and political history, has also been appointed to the Board of Trustees for the Canadian Museum of Civilization. Historians in the Academy have lost the ear of government, but not because they've been less engaged with the public or even less engaged with national history in Canada, but because I think they've become less sympathetic to the interests of the state in their analyses of the past, and as such, their histories have less use for governments interested in bolstering or promoting nationalism and ignoring or eliding class conflict, racial and ethnic oppression, the legacies of colonialism, gender and sexual inequalities, and environmental degradation. But, as I hope to make the point today, revisiting the history wars of the 1990s might actually miss the point of the current debate and conflict over Canadian history and the relationship between the federal government and the academy. Tom Peace on Active History has already written a very good article outlining some of the extent to which the 90s debates over political history no longer make a lot of sense in reflection on the changes that have occurred in Canadian historiography in the last 20 years, that quite a lot of political history is written in the academy now, just perhaps not the same kind of political history that Professor Granitstein and Professor Bliss saw as political history in the 1990s. But more importantly, the revival of the history wars of the 90s, including debates over the place of national political history in undergraduate teaching and Canadian historiography, is, I think, a red herring. The new history wars are not being fought over plaques, statues, documentaries, military history, the War of 1812, or anything like that. They're being fought in the federal budget and the publicly funded institutions that foster, support, and promote Canadian history research. Like other branches of the civil service in Canada, the primary public institutions for Canadian history have felt the impact of austerity policies of the federal Conservative government. Parks Canada, the Social Sciences and Humanities Research Council of Canada, and Library and Archives Canada have all suffered significant reductions in base funding that have limited the capacity of each of these institutions to support independent historical research. The Canadian Association of University Teachers has been the most active in compiling the full details of these budget cuts and their implications for historical research on a composite website called canadaspastmatters.ca. Last year, Parks Canada was the hardest hit of these major public institutions for Canadian history by layoffs in the civil service. As a result of the 2012 budget, the federal government reduced the funding for the agency's programs by $29 million annually, resulting in an estimated 638 job losses. Parks Canada is not just responsible for the management of national parks and parks reserves, but it's, of course, responsible for the management and preservation of 167 historic sites. The job cuts have reduced Parks Canada to 12 archaeologists and 8 conservators for the entire country. The Social Sciences and Humanities Research Council of Canada, the primary public funding council for Canadian historical scholarly research, also has suffered from these austerity policies. Between 2008 and 2012, SHRC experienced a 10% base funding reduction of $41.1 million. In its wake, the federal government has also redirected funding away from basic research programs within SHRC to special one-time grants focused more on applied research than basic research. And finally, Library and Archives Canada has experienced a wave of job losses last summer with the termination of 21 archivist and archival assistant positions, a 50% reduction in digitization and circulation staff, and the elimination of the interlibrary loans program. The cuts compounded past reductions to LAC's budget and the series of modernization policies that reduced public access to archival materials and has compromised the ability of LAC to acquire new records. Even Professor Granitstein tried to raise alarms about these threats and these cuts and policy changes and what they might mean for the preservation and knowledge of Canadian history. But he seemed puzzled by these changes, as he wrote in June 2012 in the Globe and Mail. The Harper government has genuinely seemed to be more concerned with honoring history than most of its predecessors. The emphasis given to the War of 1812 is only the most recent example, and the Prime Minister's own efforts at writing the history of hockey in Canada, during which he must have used LAC's collections and books, indicate his personal interest in the past. But the treatment of LAC will hurt research and scholarship now and forever. It shows nothing so much as contempt for the past and regrettably for the future as well. Now, Granenstein's concerns with the fate of LAC, I think, is shared by many academic historians. However, he's likely alone in his naivety regarding the conservative government's interest in the past. Like the crow whose vanity led him to be tricked by the flattery of the fox, Granenstein seems to have failed to see the broader picture of the relationship between the federal government and Canadian history. As I wrote in February on Active History, the federal government has not invested more funding into Canadian history. It's shifted funding away from arm's-length government institutions that typically have supported independent historical scholarship. And in its place, the government is focused on commemorative events and projects that fall under direct cabinet or ministerial control. In 2012, the government devoted $28 million to commemorate the War of 1812, and it retained nearly direct control over that funding through Heritage Canada and the Treasury Board. And it promises to invest a one-time investment of $25 million into the rebranding of the Canadian Museum of Civilization. But at the same time, it cut $29 million from Parks Canada, $41.1 million from SHRC, and $9.6 million from Library and Archives Canada. This is the challenge that Canadian historians, archaeologists, anthropologists, librarians, and archivists now face. What role will public financing play in historical research in the future? What effects will the reduction of federal support for historical research have on academic scholarship? What impact will the reallocation of federal public funding for selective commemorative events have on public knowledge of Canadian history? And how will direct cabinet control over the representation of Canadian history through such events and public history institutions shape our understanding of the past?